This is the Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Internet world, West Alabama, how we doing today on Wednesday? Happy hump day to you and yours. It's the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. We're hanging out live in the Derek Daniels Studios. You're watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, Bama Central Facebook page. You are listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon. Most of y'all are on Apple Podcasts, listening on your mobile devices. I appreciate everybody who's doing that. We appreciate everybody who's finding us on their favorite podcast platforms. You can find the Joe Gaither Show anywhere you get your podcast. And of course, you can find the Joe Gaither Show right here in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. Call for all of your insurance needs at 205-758-3391. Like a good neighbor, Derek Daniel is there. Call and see how much he can save you today on home, life, auto insurance needs, renter's insurance needs. He's got a sign out up front that he just updated pretty recently. He's been updating his marquee fairly often, and his sign this morning said, life insurance, a better plan than a GoFundMe. And yes, you do need life insurance, especially if you have loved ones you want to make sure that they are taken care of. Derek Daniel and his team can take care of you. Call them at 205-758-3391. Like a good neighbor, Derek Daniel is there. What are we going to do today? We are live with our man, Mason Woods. We really had a lot of fun yesterday with Slade Bolden. Slade Bolden joining the program the back half yesterday, and I appreciate his time. If you've missed that, you can find it on the Bama Central YouTube channel or right there on all those podcast platforms we just mentioned. Today, we're going to have a little bit of fun for a little bit of time, and then we're going to talk with Kirk McNair. At least that's the blueprint. Kirk McNair said that he was going to come in and join us, so I've got the chair off to my left ready to go for him, and so that would be really, really great. I would love to hear some expertise. Kirk McNair goes all the way back to Coach Bryant's days, and so I want maybe a Coach Bryant story. I want his perspective on the Crimson Tide. I want him to bust Mason just a little bit, because Kirk recently wrote Ty Simpson playing as good as any quarterback in the SEC.
And Jonathan Pierce playing pretty good. I don't know.
Okay, that'll be perfect. I'm just little, so you're not blindsided. They give you about 20-25 minutes to think about that.
I tell you what I'm very interested in hearing about, and this is not really anything necessarily, you know, pertaining to football per se, but just like the players that, you know, the players that he dealt with, the players that he interacted with regularly in his time with the football staff, with Coach Bryant, like, what were the off-field issues that players were dealing with at that time? Because obviously it's so different than what it is now, but I'm sure that they had their own issues and things like that they had to deal with and overcome and, you know, learn how to accept and things like that. But I'm interested to just hear maybe what the stark differences are between then and now.
You think there was like some poster board?
Yeah, had to, you know, each dorm room had a bulletin board and people would go put hate messages on it or something.
Leroy Jordan, you missed that tackle. Oh my goodness. get everybody excited. Mason, do you hear this in my ear or is it just my headphones? A little fuzz, fuzz, fuzz.
I don't think I've heard
it. All right, that's fine. I can deal with it then. Let's just see if that makes it any better. What do we want to start with today, Mason? Do you want to start with, I watched the first half of the Georgia-Marshall game yesterday. Just initial thoughts there. I don't really care about the Wisconsin game anymore. I don't really care about the ULM game anymore. We've talked a little bit about the offensive line. We can keep going with that. We can keep going with health. Tim Keenan. We're gonna hear from head coach Kalen DeBoer about 11:30 today on the SEC coaches teleconference, and you can see that. Well, you can hear it on the Bama Central YouTube channel. There's no real video; it's just a Zoom call that we've been recording and putting on the Bama Central YouTube channel. I imagine he's gonna get asked about injuries. He's gonna get asked about Jam Miller. Get asked about Tim Keenan. Get asked about Jamarian Latham as well ahead of this Georgia game, and he's probably gonna give some ho-hum answer just because. Why would you give the Georgia ball? Did you see Shane Beamer's answer to, was it Pete Thamel, about Lenore Sellers? So Lenore is hurt, right?
Maybe. I feel like I may have kind of just seen it come through my feed, but didn't really look into it too much.
It was so great. So I guess it was Pete Thamel trying to get some insight on Lenore Sellers and his injury status. And his Shane Beamer, good answer, you're growing on me. Basically, he says, well, we have an official injury report that we have to submit.
Yes, I did. Okay, I did see that. That's good. I like that.
We have an official injury. We're not telling you any extra information.
Speaking of the official injury report, there's a little bit of weird issues with that last week with Ole Miss and their quarterback situation.
Toddy, Toddy, gosh, I'm
mighty. Interested to see how that progresses because, I got to be honest, that second string guy might have looked a little better than Austin Simmons.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin gonna take a fine probably for that.
I don't understand why teams do that. It's pretty easy for folks to find out about it the day of the game when a guy all of a sudden is hurt and doesn't play. Especially now when you need every penny that you can possibly have as a program. Very foolish to be, you know, frivolously losing it like that.
I think Lane doesn't care about the fine. It'll come out of his pocket. And he thought, well, the competitive advantage that he had over Arkansas, wanted to maintain that competitive advantage.
Man, I thought Arkansas was going to win that game.
It came down late, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one score. What was it, 42-35, I think was the final?
Yeah, what was I into? I was into Texas A&M and Notre Dame.
That was a pretty good one, too.
And the worst holding call known to man didn't get called.
That one was tough.
If I were a Notre Dame fan, I think I probably still wouldn't be able to sleep.
Well, I would tell that Notre Dame fan, you maybe should have secured the victory a little earlier.
We haven't talked about Tyler Buchner the whole week because of that. Like, I felt awful for Tyler Buchner. If anybody didn't see it, oh, perfect. If anybody didn't see it, Tyler Buchner, who has transferred back to Notre Dame, he played lacrosse, won a national championship there, then walked on to the football team saying basically something to the extent of, I got to finish my legacy.
I'm not ready to leave college.
Right. I got to finish it out. I got to do better and, you know, wrap this up with an exclamation point. Well, you're not beating out C.J. Carr, and he was walking on anyways, and so it was always kind of going to be like a bench role, supportive role.
He was going to be a clipboard guy.
Exactly. Except I guess he was the best holder on the team.
Well, so they thought.
Right. You got to go find a new holder, Marcus Freeman. If you didn't see it, it was Tyler Buchner on the final PAT hold. It was tied. Tied. And scored a touchdown, and Buchner bungled the hold. It was a fine snap. It wasn't anything wrong with the snap at all.
I watched the replay a couple times. It looked like, unfortunately, it was pretty much all on Buchner.
Yeah, just didn't catch it cleanly and bungled it. Wasn't able to pick it back up and set it on the spot. So they tried to do a little fire drill, and it didn't work. So they were down six.
I can't think of a single example when I've ever seen a fire drill play work, like, you know, on a botch snap or a muff, something like, you know, punter drops it, whatever. Maybe on a punt, you've seen it a couple, like, weirdo, he breaks through a hole somewhere and gets him 8-10 yards, but like never on a PAT.
Yeah, no, I can't think of that. I can think of a few like fakes where it's like intentional. Yeah.
Everybody yell fire, like it never works.
So Buchner bungles the snap. Did you feel bad for him?
I mean, yeah, you know, I always feel bad for anybody that
NBC did him dirty. NBC just kept cutting over to him.
Yeah, they did.
Just kept cutting over to him.
I haven't seen the numbers, but I would imagine, I think his screen time from the moment that he fumbled that snap to the end of the game skyrocketed from the time before. They were not really mentioning him, and then the camera couldn't get away from him. That was tough. Yeah, I mean, I felt bad for him. It's not like he did anything really at Alabama that was so egregious to make me want to root against him anything. He played one game and he wasn't great. And then, you know, someone else came in and they won anyway. So it was okay. I feel bad for him. That's tough. Hopefully, I'm sure that's something that will kill your confidence. And being a player where like you have one job apparently, and it's, hey, go out there and hold this. That's the tough spot to be in.
Want to say good morning to Betty Chamberlain and saying Roll Tide forever on our Facebook page. Roll Tide is Betty. Thank you for joining us today. Want to say good morning to Everett Osmer. Everett texted me yesterday saying he was mad at us, and his comment affirmed this. He said, it's not the Vanderbilt love affair.
You're not going to make me hate Vanderbilt. I got to say, Everett, I they just have a special place in my heart.
Go Doors. Anchor down.
Roll Doors.
Diego Pavia, he was in the news yesterday. Apparently, his attorney is trying to use Diego Pavia as an example for antitrust or something, trying to get extra years of eligibility. Diego Pavia goes out and says, well, this is my last year anyways.
I hope it is. I sure hope it is.
Right.
That'll
make me flip on you pretty bad.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. If you try to squeeze one more year out, my opinion will change on you probably pretty quick, Diego Pavia. Right now, I'm a big fan. I hope that, while I don't necessarily foresee your NFL career being all that long I hope that maybe it does. And I'd like to see you on my TV more in the future. Not in college football.
He's going to become
the Birmingham Stallion.
Exactly. He's the face of the Spring League. He's going to be the man of the Spring League, and he's going to go out and say all kinds of nyan, 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 nyan.
He'll make people actually watch.
Right, exactly. The headlines for the Spring League. Man, I got to watch this kid play.
He'll come out and say, I think we're better than any NFL team. We can beat all 32 of them.
Yes. What do you think about it? What's going on? Yes, perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Good morning.
Derek, thank you very much, sir.
Come on, join us, Kirk. I got to get a seat right here.
How's it going this morning?
Kirk, do you know Mason? Mason Woods is with us at Bama Central. Good morning. We're live. You can sit right here. Yep. Perfect. And that microphone's going to be for you, so you can just grab it and pull it on in. It'll work on a swivel. And you can just grab it, pick it up, and pull it wherever you want to. That's perfect.
Is that close enough? Close to it.
There you go, sir. Perfect. Good morning. I'll move over a little bit and give you some room, and we'll get you right about there. Yeah, how about that?
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, there you go. How you doing this morning, Kirk? Good to see you.
Good.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Glad to.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been kind of getting into just random storylines this morning already. We haven't really talked about anything. We talked about Vanderbilt for a minute, Tyler Buchner for a minute, Notre Dame for a minute. We're just trying to fill some time before we get an expert into the studio. Did you find it okay?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Kirk, let's start this up by just asking a bit of background, because I was selling it earlier in the week. You've been covering the Crimson Tide since the early 60s. You were with Coach Bryant. You were with Coach Bryant.
Late 60s.
Okay.
Late 60s.
you were with Coach Bryant as a student assistant or as an SID. Just give us a little bit of your background, because I just know you rich history with the Crimson Tide, the program.
Yeah, I wasn't as a student assistant. I was with the Birmingham Post-Herald, which was the morning paper in those days. I'd always had to work my way through school a little bit. So I was in law school in the day and working for the Post-Herald at night. After a little stint in the Army, I had to go was actually named assistant sports editor at the Post-Herald. I was 24 years old, and they have second largest paper in the state, and that seemed odd to me. But what it meant was that every other week or every other game, roughly, I was covering Alabama. There weren't beat writers in those days, so I was covering Auburn on other weekends. And Charlie Thornton was the sports information director at Alabama, and one day he called me and wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming down and working with him, which at the time I probably was not, but I wasn't going to say no to a guy that I depended on for help. So I went down, interviewed, he offered me the job. I went back and told my wife about it. She said, "When can we leave?" She was tired of me working nights. What she didn't know was that working for Coach Bryant, I was going to be working nights, weekends. Yeah. So I got to work for him for 9 years, four as assistant SID and five as SID. And I told him later, I was 29 when I was named sports information director for the biggest name in college sports. And I didn't tell him right then and let him change his mind, but I told him a few years later that I thought somebody had lost their mind when they made me SID. But to my fortunate remembrance, he said, "You earned it." So I've always been proud of that. And then if you want me to go on.
Absolutely. I want everybody who doesn't know who you are, who's going to be listening and watching today, just to know how much history they're listening to, expertise they're listening to.
So I started, I talked to some people in the publications business. And as much as I loved Coach Bryant, I cherished every day. I couldn't wait to get up and go to work every day, but I wasn't making very much money. I thought I could pay myself more than he was paying me. And so I started Bama Magazine, which was, we went through some growing pains because we thought we could do a Sports Illustrated type deal, send it out every week and have people get it. And the fact was they couldn't get it within 4 days or so. So between printing and mailing, we just couldn't get it done. So we changed to a monthly magazine with weekly newsletters, which worked out pretty well because the newsletters went out first class. And then, you know, the internet came along, and I finally decided that, unlike hula hoops, it was here to stay. and so here I was, probably the least technological person imaginable, but started a website, oddly enough, named Bama Online, which after I changed the name of it, somebody else picked that up and it's still going, but not mine. And so I had BamaMag.com, and that was that. And then the most amazing thing that ever happened in my life, other than my wife and children and grandchildren, was somebody offered to buy my magazine and internet site. It's hard to sell a magazine when you're basically it. And somebody else did and hired me at a long-term contract to run it. So I got the best of both worlds. And it was owned by Fox Sports. And after about 3 years, they said they were getting out of the magazine business. They'd taken on too many. Mine was great, but they had too many that were underwater, so they were just going to get out of that business. And I said, "Well, I've got this contract." They said, "Don't worry about it. You're going to get all of that," which was more than I ever paid myself, almost. And so I continued just with the internet site. Then there was a, as there is in this business, mergers and acquisitions.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up working for CBS on the 24/7 site is basically the way it went. It took some things that happened there. Then they broke up to own three, as you all know, and no sense hiding the fact there are other sites.
Right. No, exactly. It's all good.
And then this year, not at all to my surprise, I was expecting it, because I can read the financials. And then I thought CBS canceled Blue Bloods, one of the best shows that's ever been on television. So I figured they would do what they did. They decided to not renew my contract, which was sort of a relief. I'm 80 years old, and I was a little tired of the hassle of games. I was a little tired of inane press conferences. I wish the coaches would spend more time teaching football than teaching their players to be disingenuous with reporters.
Oh, my God. So,
but anyway, that's the way that is. And then I'm a longtime friend of Paul Bryant Jr. We're the same age and known each other a long, long time. Even before I went to work for Alabama, I knew Paul Jr. And we were having lunch one day, and he said, "Hey, the museum website is not very good. Would you be interested in trying to make something out of this?" And I'm thinking, no. But hard to say no to Paul Jr.
Sure, of course.
And so I said, yeah, I'll give it a whirl. And so that's what I'm doing now. We haven't really got it up and going yet. There's a lot of red tape to go through a university. You know, if somebody wants to change the paper towel company or something, I think they establish a committee to discover paper towels. And so I'm, we're still waiting to get up and going. I've been writing content and I'll be, you know, trying to go as hard as I can and not in competition with you or anybody else, because we won't do recruiting by virtue of being part of the university. We can't publicize prospects. And one of my features when I was on my own and with 24/7, I had a picks column every week with the Grand Geek and the Nerds and the Almost Perfect Picks department. I'll be dropping at least the gambling part of that. I thought the Nerds had retired with me, but maybe I can get them back. And so there's where I am today. Just kind of waiting to get this website going and see if we can make something out of it.
Well, that's all. I mean, extensive history. And I just have such a deep sense of appreciation, one, just to know you, and two, to have your time today. So I want to express that to you, a real gratitude that you give us some of your time. What do you want to start with, Mason? Do you want to start with Coach Bryant stuff? Do you want to start with this year's team stuff? Let's start with this year's team for the people with short attention spans, and then we can talk about maybe 19. What do I have? 65, where Alabama lost their first game of the season and went on to win the national championship. Kind of trying to make a parallel there, Kirk. But let's start with this year's team. Just. You said mundane press conferences, and look, Coach DeBoer, he's doing what he's doing on the field, and I think mostly it's going fairly well. 9-3 last year, and obviously 2-1. You had a bad start in week one, but the football team looks largely competent. What have you thought of Coach DeBoer? Obviously, we were so blessed to be covering Coach Nick Saban for so long. They're obviously two sides of different. Two different people, but they're both high-level winners, really. What have you thought of Coach DeBoer and really transitioning into the second year, how he's done kind of settling into the second year, getting his guys, getting his program, getting his message? He talked, you heard it. We told the guys, get on board or get out in the spring. Kind of. We told him to, if you're not with it, you can hit the portal kind of deal. And so what's your just overall impressions of Coach DeBoer and the way that this season has really started?
Yeah, well, I'll really start back a little earlier.
Yeah, please.
When he came in at a bad time, really, which that's the nature of the business, that coaches retire or are retired usually at the end of the season. Now, there have been already a couple of coaches fired this year. We're right now, what, at a quarter of the way through. And so DeBoer came in, and I thought the first thing I thought was, this is a man of courage. It took a lot of guts to not only follow Coach Saban, but also to want to do it. So that impressed me. What little I've seen of him on the practice field, he impresses me as a Gene Stallings type. He seems to be a jovial kind of guy, but fairly stern, fairly active on the practice field, not just an observer. He's a coach there. I like his staff. You know, he inherited a team that lost 41 players from the last Saban team. And I thought his recruiting was basically done at that time. But I thought he did a good job with that and with the portal. You know, everybody criticized him. He didn't sign anybody from Alabama or very few. And he came back this year, I thought, with a vengeance in recruiting, dominated the state again and getting the top players. And I've always believed that good Alabama players are as good as anywhere else or better, because there's great high school coaching in this state. And you can't make a whole team out of them, but you sure can use them. And so that's a good sign. obviously the Florida State game was a terrible opener. And I'm not exactly sure. They just didn't look engaged in that game. Now, the next two games were against lesser competition than Florida State. And Florida State, as I had predicted, would be a lot better team this year than last year. That was an anomaly last year. And I didn't think that, first of all, I didn't think Norville was a bad coach. I think he's a good coach. And then I thought him replacing his coordinators would probably have a very good effect, especially Malzahn, who's, you know,
he's a wizard,
proven coach. Yeah. So, you know, you just have to put that in the rearview mirror. There's nothing you can do about it now, except just keep building and building. And I've seen some things that are very good. I'm a little disappointed right now in the offensive line. You know, I can't say one person on there has been as good as they can be. Not even Brailsford. Brailsford's made some mistakes. Who's as good as they come? Proctor. Of course, Roberts was hurt. Those three have all been listed on All-America teams. So you've got three offensive linemen that are potential All-Americans. You'd think that offensive line would have gelled a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not blaming anybody. It's just an observation, in my opinion. The running game, therefore, has been just average at best. Now, Jam Miller's not been there, and he's a good running back. He's not I wouldn't put him in the great category, but I wouldn't put him in the bad category either. So he's going to be back, presumably, for the Georgia game. And that's good, but I'm not sure he can do it on his own. So to my way of thinking, I'm going to be watching the offensive line to see if something clicks with that part of the offense. You know, the wide receivers, good gosh, even with the criticism of Ryan, I kind of laughed at that people were thinking that he needed to hit the road or demote it or something. There's not a college team in America that wouldn't want Ryan Williams. The pros can't wait to draft him.
Yeah, 20 NFL teams would take him right now.
Yeah, so, you know, it's that was laughable, but what you expect on, you know, be honest, what you expect on from internet coaches. So I think everything else, tight end looks pretty good, I think. They're blocking well. They've had a few receptions. So I'm generally pleased. You know, Lawson looked, as somebody pointed out, I think Kane Womack pointed out, you know, there's some doubt when you're coming back from that kind of injury. And he looked that way against Florida State, a little hesitant. And so he looks pretty good now, and we know he's pretty good. So I think that, you know, losing Keenan is a bad loss, you know, in the middle. But there's some guys up there, big body, and now Beeman. So the defensive line's taking some hits, but I think they're going to be okay. And, you know, you just watch, you see these guys are all good athletes, good players. I would say, though, they need to somehow, and I don't know how you do this, consistency has to be better.
And that's, I just want to keep asking about the defense, about, you know, obviously Alabama's getting ready to face off against Gunnar Stockton, a guy who has had a lot of success running the ball this year, and that has been, I mean, and not even necessarily just under Kalen DeBoer, but even, you know, kind of going back to some of the Saban teams, a quarterback that can run has been a kryptonite for Alabama's defense for seemingly a while now. What do you think it is about that specifically that, you know, gives Alabama so many headaches? Do you think it's something that Alabama does schematically that doesn't match up well? Or do you think it's just simply, it's just kind of the way, you know, running quarterbacks just have a special way of gashing, you know, Alabama's defense a little bit.
Alabama's and everybody else's running quarterbacks take away a player that has to be blocked. You know that he's, I mean, that can block. He's a special kind of guy, and that's why also Alabama's had great success with running quarterbacks. Alabama running quarterbacks, but you know, most of the time, the running backs that have hurt Alabama are good players. So they do it to other teams too, you know. And somebody says, "Well, Alabama's had a lot of trouble with so and so and so and so." Well, so did everybody else, sure. You know. So you're talking about elite players.
Yeah.
That most of the time, Alabama's troubles come from elite quarterbacks. So, you know, you just again, that's. You know, we talk about consistency, but there's also you've got to have, you hear coaches say this all the time, just do your job. Your job is not, your teammate over here is in trouble. Go help him. That's not your job. It's a group effort maybe, but don't fail to do your job. And you see, you know, not just Alabama, you see that a lot. But of course, Alabama should be a step above. And I don't have any doubts that Alabama's not going to be relegated to some terrible program that's, you know, we've heard that before. Mm-hmm. Alabama fans can forget it during the Dubose years, particularly, I mean, in the Shula years. Alabama fans just need to get over it. They're done. Well, six national championships later, there's no reason for Alabama fans to think that they're not going to be better days ahead.
Kirk, why does Alabama have such a, I guess, I don't want to say a voodoo or a curse or whatnot. Why do you think Alabama has such a hold over the Georgia Bulldogs? You played several epic games over the last decade. It really even dating back to 2007, where Georgia did win in overtime. But Georgia, those are two wins, 07 and 21 in the national championship for Georgia. Alabama is what, 6-7-2 in that time, despite both programs being operated at a largely the highest level of college football. But Alabama just seems to have Georgia's number. You're going into Athens next week. Why do you think Alabama has had Georgia's number?
Well, in most of those games, Alabama had equal or better players and a better coach. So they were upsets. Several of them were upsets in so far as what, you know, Boys in the Desert had to say about it. But things happen sometimes with coaches. And it happened with Coach Bryant against Tennessee. He got Tennessee. He was so obsessed with it that he probably stressed his team about it.
Never beat Nealon. Never beat General Nealon, correct?
Well, yeah, a lot of people didn't beat General Nealon.
Well, right.
But, in fact, I did a story one day with Coach Bryant about his wins and not to get too deep into it.
Oh, please get deep.
Well, it was... That's when I was assistant SID, and when I went there, he had won 193 games, I think, and won 6 that year. And so I was thinking, you know, pretty sure that he would get to 200 in 1971, and I thought it would probably be Southern Miss game, the second game of the year. And so I just went up and sat down with him for, I don't know, half an hour, maybe, and got him to record just sort of the biggest wins that had shaped his career from Maryland through where he was then.
Kentucky and A&M and now Alabama.
Yeah, and it was pretty interesting. I ran across where I typed up the transcript the other day. I still got that. And So I remember that one thing he said was, he was talking about Kentucky, said, and we had our annual loss to Tennessee. But anyway, he changed. He quit, he quit putting the players in the scout team in orange and white helmets, or helmets anyway, with a tee that they made out of athletic tape, and playing the music and all that. And he just started treating it like he did every other game. And then, of course, ran off, what, a 10 or 11 game winning streak against Tennessee. And so those things happen. Another team gets in your head. Well, Kirby was at Alabama, knew Saban, and everybody said, like everybody hires coaches, like they did from Coach Bryant's staff, like they did from Coach Saban's staff, because they want to catch some of that magic. Truth is, there's only been one Bryant, there's only been one Saban. And just because you hire their assistants or even coordinators doesn't mean that you hired him. So I think Alabama's been in Kirby's head. Now, he might be getting over that. These games, he could have won several of those games.
Oh, yes.
And,
right there in his fingertips.
Right.
Still think about Justin Fields. Taking,
but, I'd say that one was definitely his fault when he lost the SEC championship game when Jalen came in for Tua and he did the fake punt. Mm-hmm. All he had to do was punt the ball away.
I mean, I still think about that game.
That game's probably won. But for the most part, players were about equal. Alabama had some difference makers at quarterback. And so they were mostly good games, but Alabama won them. Now, the blackout game in Athens, that was, I've forgotten the exact score, but it was, the game wasn't nearly as close as that final score. It was over at halftime. I've told people before that the best thing about that blackout game was those drunk Georgia co-eds in those little black dresses.
Yeah.
So they'll be ready for Alabama. I don't know if they'll have a blackout or anything like that. I don't know.
That was my freshman year, Kirk, and I worked for Coach Saban. I was a student assistant there, and Coach Cochran was yelling the whole week through the building, they're wearing black because they're going to their bleeping funerals. Yeah, just right. The whole week. And I thought, okay, we'll see what we do. And it was, as you said, I mean, you had John Parker to Julio Jones over the top, and it was like, yep, it's over. So it was great.
Have worried about blackouts, whiteouts, or anything else. I don't think that has. There are lots of things, you talk about bulletin board material and all that. And when I was at Alabama, the assistant coaches were all into that. Coach Bryant wasn't. He didn't think that had any effect. He thought after the first play and everybody had been hit, that was all out the window. So, and I agree with that. Players have enough on their minds without thinking it's a blackout, we got to get them, or something. So, I look forward to the Georgia game. I think it'll be a very important game for Alabama. And I've watched Georgia, and they're good, but they're not overpowering good. I don't believe. I could be wrong. They may prove me wrong, but right now, I think Alabama stands a chance of winning that game.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
It seems like a lot of the SEC this year, especially the four or five teams kind of at the top, your Alabama's, Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, maybe Oklahoma could be in that category this year. Maybe Texas, we're still unsure about them. It feels like a lot of those teams are kind of all within one step of each other. Nobody has really separated themselves yet this year. Do you think that it's going to just be a season where the SEC cannibalizes itself a little bit because the talent has spread out a bit more now? Everybody's evened out a little bit. You've got good quarterbacks at several different schools. Or do you think that, you know, by the end of the SEC schedule, we'll maybe see one team kind of solidify themselves as the top dog in the SEC this year?
You know, this is not the first time we've heard this potential narrative.
Yeah, this is true.
So I would say that I would expect the SEC to get three or four teams in the playoffs. And I think that the nature of the, well, the expectations for the SEC based on reality is that there'll be some good teams that end up at the top. Now, you know, a team like Vanderbilt or Mississippi State, South Carolina is disappointing right now, but, you know, they could come back and mess things up. Ole Miss is in that. You didn't mention them, but they're one of those teams that could be there. Florida, I don't think can, but who knows? Lagway's a talented guy if he's healthy. So there will be some upsets, but I do think that there are some teams that'll be pretty darn good, and I think Alabama's one of them. Alabama's got a tough schedule. You know, if they had Texas's schedule, I think they'd be
feeling a lot better,
a lot more considered right now. We're only a third of the way through the season, or fourth of the way through the season.
Sure.
So it's early yet, but I think every team that I've seen has shown some vulnerability, and every team I've seen has looked pretty good. So really every team except maybe Florida has been, I mean, Arkansas looks better.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Mississippi State, Vanderbilt looks like they're turning the corner based on one win last year, beating Alabama.
Sure. They've
completely turned their psyche around now that they can.
They know they can do it now.
Tear down goalposts. So, and of course, Pavia's really, really talented guy. He's proved that over 3 years now, but at New Mexico State, and then beating Auburn, and then last year, Alabama.
And Auburn, too.
And Auburn again. You know, I don't think many people thought they could go to South Carolina and win that game. Mm-hmm. And not only did they win it, they dominated every aspect. That running back looked pretty darn good.
Marks, is that it?
Cedric Alexander?
Alexander, okay.
Yeah.
He's good.
So, you know, they might resurrect the Alexander the Great from LSU. So, that's a long time ago. Probably nobody remembers Charles Alexander except me, but he was a great running back at LSU and had that moniker. You know, I don't worry about the SEC too much.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be there. They've got a lot of advantages. The best high school players in the country are, as a whole, are in the SEC. There may be more in California
some
years, and lots in Ohio where they've only got one school there, sort of like Georgia and Georgia that they really worry about, although Georgia Tech's coming along a little bit. LSU, they're, you know, one of those one-school states with good football players. So there are certain things that just figure in, but SEC's going to be just fine.
Well, Kirk, let me spin you to something you wrote recently about Ty Simpson. Really, you know, mediocre first week, okay first week, but that's your first start on the road, a hostile environment, and then perfect. So week number two, 17 of 17. Week number three, really, really on fire as well, making some high-level throws against the Wisconsin defense. We did all summer long. Basically, the whole summer, will Ty Simpson become Mac Jones, or will he become Blake Barnett, where, you know, senior leader gets benched for young freshman? And
we'll just be honest, Mason was kind of in the skeptical zone for Ty Simpson all summer long. I don't know if he's going to do it. I don't know if he's the man. You recently wrote, Ty Simpson is playing as good as any quarterback in the SEC. What do you see out of Ty Simpson so far, and what can he do the rest of the three quarters? What do you expect from him the back half of the season, the back half of the three quarters? And Mason, you got another quarterback that's playing better than him in the SEC. You want to go back?
I don't know better, but I do think there's a couple. You know, there's another guy up there who's in that argument.
Go ahead, Kirk, and we'll let y'all just chat about
bad
it.
Quarterbacks in the SEC. I was had a little advantage maybe over most journalists in that I'm a member of the Tuscaloosa Red Elephant Club. And so I got to see a lot more of Ty Simpson than everybody else over the past few years. I never saw him have a bad scrimmage. He was always good. He's a lot faster than people think. Now, he's not as fast as Milrow probably, but he's in that neighborhood. And I love the way he reads the field. You can just see his head as he makes the progressions, not just across, but back again. He has great pocket awareness. He knows when to get out and when to stay in there and do job one, which is when a pass play is called pass. So I was very high on him. I didn't think he should have started last year ahead of Milrow. Milrow, people just seem to forget. Alabama won a lot of games because of Milrow.
True.
And
a snap or two away from the national championship game.
Yeah. And, you know, well, to get to overtime, maybe, you know, yeah. So nobody wanted to play Milrow. I mean, other teams weren't saying, oh, boy, we've got them now. Look who they're playing at quarterback. Georgia last year, for instance, you know. we'll see that highlight play for a long time of that last touchdown pass to Ryan Williams. Not so much people don't talk about Milrow. A lot of people just show the clip after he caught it. But somebody had to throw it to him. And so that was pretty just a snapshot example. So I would say that I'm not surprised by Ty Simpson at all. I expected him to be good, but different. But there are all sorts of different quarterbacks, sure. You know. I saw Namath and I saw Stabler, and they were different. But they could beat you in a lot of – both of them could beat you in a lot of ways. And, in fact, the last game I saw sitting in the stands as a real person was Stabler's run in the mud to beat Auburn in 1960. Wow. What was that, seven, I guess. And drenched, sitting in the upper deck, drenched, but very happy, you know. Just quick little story.
Yeah, please.
Quick little story on that game. Gusta Yearout was a great linebacker for Auburn, and we'd gone to high school together. And a few years later, several years later, Gusta and I were at a cocktail party together. And, you know, just a bunch of guys around talking football like this happens. And I said, Gusta, you know, you were lucky Dennis Dixon tackled you on that player. Nobody had ever known who you were. And he laughed. Of course, he was a great player. Everybody would have known who he was. And he's still a good friend. So, but anyway, that's way getting off the topic of good quarterbacks. But, you know, you can't. You look around at the SEC, and who's the quarterback you think is a liability? Nobody. Everybody, I think, I don't know about the guy at Kentucky yet, but also hadn't watched Kentucky, I'll be honest.
Well, it's his like ninth year in college football, so surely he's pretty good by this point.
Well, he beat Alabama. He beat Coach Saban in
22 or 23.
22 at A&M where they kicked the field goal. Yeah.
Simpson, and I would put Simpson among the very best of them.
I think right now he is playing among the best guys. I think there's probably 3, 4, 5 guys you could throw into that conversation right now. But, you know, Talon Green, I think, is playing really, really well for Arkansas. Joey Aguilar has looked great for Tennessee this year, yes, which is a shock to me. I was completely wrong about him. You know, you go back and watch him at App State.
I was, too.
He was not great. He led the league in interceptions, I think, last year or the year before. But, you know, he has surprised me. And then John Mateer has looked good. A little bit of trouble with some interceptions. He's thrown like 3 through the first 3 games. But he's looked good. You know,
hey, I like Gunnar Stockton from what I've seen as well.
Gunnar Stockton has been pretty solid. It really is. Like, top to bottom, it feels like it's a really, really strong quarterback league. Like you said, I have a hard time looking around and finding liabilities anywhere.
Yeah, put the Gus bus, I mean the Nuss bus in there. Pavia. There are a lot of good quarterbacks. You mentioned Stockton and Aguilar. Like everybody else who could, I watched that game with great interest. And
great game.
So is it two great offenses or two suspect defenses? Because, you know, Aguilar, I mean, he hit passes.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't hit passes in tight windows. I'm not going to say none.
Sure.
But basically, he was throwing to wide open guys.
A lot of time.
Stockton hit that first pass, you know, to start the game. It was a magnificent pass. And mm-hmm. also the late one to give him the opportunity to tie the game. But in between, it was sort of just sort of pedestrian, I thought. I'm curious. We'll find out more about those two teams
sure.
as we go along, but that was an interesting scoring barrage that I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it'd be better defense than that.
I really like – I only watched the first half. I watched the last 12 minutes of that Tennessee game, and then yesterday I watched the first half of Alabama and – or excuse me, of Georgia and Marshall. And I just think Georgia's got offense, has a lot of weapons and a lot of different ways to attack a defense. So I think Kane Walmack's got his hands full next week.
Well, I know he thinks so too. and you expect that when you're playing a top 5 team. You know, not that the polls are over yet. There's a lot to be settled about those early season rankings and preseason rankings. But I'm not against them. I think anything that has people talking about college football is good. You know, you can argue about the polls, but I'm just anxious to see more of Georgia and Tennessee. Texas, whoa, what's going on there? They've got more good players than anybody, probably. But Alabama's in that group too, but Alabama didn't lose the Florida State game because of one quarterback looking bad. that was a team effort. I would say right now that there are great questions, maybe doubt, et cetera, about Arch Manning. As I wrote this week, if his name was Arch Bunker, you know, he'd be quarter bum.
That's right.
But I don't believe that he is not going to be a good quarterback. I think he's going to be just fine, and I don't know what's wrong right now, but they'll work that out. So it's a fun time of year. Goes fast.
It does go fast.
We wait, and we turn around, and we're a quarter of the way through the season.
We blink, and we're at the bye week already. Yeah. What do you make of Alabama's struggles on the road under Coach DeBoer? I mean, obviously, you've played some good teams. Tennessee last year was a good team, playoff team. Looks like Florida State is a good team this year. It seems like they are, obviously, off to a hot start. But
Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt obviously improved from last year, but I don't know if they probably are qualified as good. Yes, they won the Birmingham Bowl, so you're 7-6. But Oklahoma beats Alabama to get to a bowl game, so they're not quite. See, I was more embarrassed by the Oklahoma loss than the Vanderbilt loss. What do you make of Alabama's struggles on the road under Coach DeBoer?
Well, I don't know if it's, you know, just that they didn't have all the pieces. They didn't have everything that you need to have in a team. It's hard to question anything or hypothesize on anything.
Sure.
Because you're not in the building. I agree with you. Oklahoma was the real disappointment. That was hard to figure. The offense in that game was just couldn't click on anything. And but you know, you can also, you know, say, well, they win games too.
Sure.
They LSU like a drum on the road in what's supposed to be the toughest place to play. So it's they just weren't in my opinion, that was not a DeBoer type team. I think he's closer now to what he had at Washington. I only saw maybe two Washington games, maybe three, or parts of, you know. I didn't see them a lot, but I knew they were darn good. Now, they had Penix, a quarterback, and three great receivers. But they were good on both sides of the line. You know, they were in the game with Michigan for the national championship. So I think that just wasn't a DeBoer team last year. You know, you can look forward to seeing more. Like I said about, I'm looking forward to seeing more of Georgia and Tennessee. I'm looking forward to seeing more of Alabama.
Disappointing losses last year. You know, it felt like the talk surrounding Alabama football kind of reached, you know, its absolute breaking point almost of just the online discourse. Oh, we'll fire Kalen DeBoer, da da da. This is not the standard, whatever, you know, so on and so forth. Under Coach Bryant, you know, anytime there was any kind of loss where it was Alabama goes in, you know, were there any losses where Alabama goes into as a heavy favorite, and then you come out and everybody, you know, I'm sure it was a little different there without Twitter being around, so you probably didn't have as direct access to it, to hearing what people had to say about it. But just what was the kind of reaction like when those sorts of things happened under Coach Bryant?
Well, he had two back-to-back years, 6 win seasons, and on his TV show, he said, "I hear a lot of talk out there that the alumni are dissatisfied. Well, the only two alumni that are going to have anything to say about that are me and Mary Harmon."
I love that.
And he came back in 1971 and turned it around and won 3 more national championships, 8 SEC championships in the South. And so, you know, he could straighten it out. Now, there aren't too many Paul Bryants around in the world. In fact, he's the only one I've ever been aware of that could do that. And who did it? I asked him one time after, I think it was after I'd left working for him, and what he wanted to be remembered for. And he said, "I want to be remembered for rebuilding Alabama a second time," because he had rebuilt it, let it slide, and then brought it back. And he was, in my opinion, the best ever. Ivan Mazel has a book coming out, I think today's the publication date, on Frank Leahy, the great Notre Dame coach who didn't coach very long. And I told him, when I first heard about it, I said, "I'm going to read your book, but I'm going to remember that Beano Cook and I had a discussion a long time ago when he thought Leahy was the greatest coach ever. And I disagreed. And my point has been, I think, vindicated in that people still talk about Coach Bryant, Frank Leahy, until Ivan comes up with this book. You haven't heard his name in a long time." So I think he was the best ever. And that's without anything about Saban. They were just different. I always thought that, man, if Coach Bryant could have a team recruited by Coach Saban, they'd win the NFL championship.
But speaking of that, I got a couple of Tennessee buddies that will always throw at me, well, Coach Bryant just gave everybody a scholarship to keep good athletes at Alabama, or to get good athletes at Alabama. You know, he basically saying the game, the system, by over giving scholarships and keeping the rosters high. And I just always roll my eyes at that. Well, you lived it. What's the truth there?
Everybody had the same number of scholarships. Alabama had the same number as everybody else. It was an NCAA rule. It wasn't an SEC rule. Or maybe at one time it was. I don't remember for sure. But, you could sign at the top level that it ever was. You could sign 80 over 2 years, as many as 45. You could sign as many as 45 in 1 year, but 80 over 2 years. And so I don't think Alabama ever reached 45. If they did, I don't remember it. And they just recruited well. It wasn't numbers that do it. I mean, I could go out there and sign 60 guys to a scholarship, and I couldn't win one game with them. So, you know, there's a lot more to it. Obviously, talent counts. You got to have good players, and he got good players. They picked them out. And then there's this. Who would you rather play for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was his recruiting advantage. They wanted to play for him.
No.
And they even wanted to play for him in the wishbone, which the wishbone is probably a perfect offense.
I wish we ran it just more in college football now.
Well, the reason that Alabama got out of it, Ray Perkins came in, and I asked Ray, what kind of offense you run? I don't even watch pro football. I didn't care. And he said, anything but the wishbone. And I said, I understand that, because quarterbacks don't want to play in it. Running backs don't want to share the load with two others. Wide receivers don't want to be mostly blockers. Offensive linemen want to learn to pass block. You know, none of that happens in the wishbone. So, it's a great offense, and I loved it, watching it. Alabama did more with it than anybody. First of all, they read it. Some teams lined up in the wishbone, but they just had a call to play. Alabama actually read it. You had to have a magician at quarterback, and they did. They had good quarterbacks to do it, where you read the end, outside linebacker, whatever you want to call it. Is he crashing or is he going out? If he's crashing, you keep fake to the fullback, keep going. Next guy's probably going to be what we call a nickel, or possibly some safety cornerback. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Goes out. If he's taking the pitch man, quarterback run.
Off you go.
If he's coming in, give it to the pitch man. Coach Bryant said one time, he said, one of the things you work for in football is to outnumber the opponent. And the wishbone was the perfect offense for that. Not only that, you could do more in the passing game because your best wide receiver, and Alabama had good ones, Ozzie Newsome, quintessential, they're going to be in one-on-one coverage all the time. And sometimes that guy's going to come off too thinking it's run. So you had a lot of big plays in the passing game. Mal Moore was great at innovating in that. He was the offensive coordinator. And although he'll be remembered a lot more for having hired Nick Saban.
So. Now, I've always read about the story that Coach Bryant went to John McKay, right? The Texas coach running the wishbone. The USC. Daryl Royal at Texas. Don McKay's USC. Went to Daryl Royal to learn the wishbone and implemented it in secret. So I've just read about this stuff, and you know, he told the journalist not to write this stuff, that sort of thing. These just things that I've read. What's the real story behind it? Because obviously this is in the revamping of Alabama at that time. You know, wanted to mix some things up. So he went to Daryl Royal and asked the media not to report. Well, what really happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Alabama had played in the Blue Bonnet Bowl
right.
in Houston at the end of the 1970 season. And it ended up 24-24. Alabama missed a chip shot field goal at the end. And but Oklahoma had run the wishbone. And so on the plane back, as it turned out, I was sitting on the aisle on the right side, and Coach Bryant was sitting on the aisle just, you know, that much in front of me, offset seats on the left side. And so he pulls out his legal pad. He always had used a legal pad. That's why you probably noticed I always use legal pads. And a big old thick fountain pen he had. And he started drawing up the wishbone, and I'm watching it. And I'm thinking, he's doing due diligence. How do you stop this offense? And believe it or not, I never asked him if that's planted the seed. Powell Jr. and I talked about it one day, and he said he thinks that he agreed with me. He's probably trying to figure out how to stop it. And I thought, well, I wonder. In fact, I said it to Paul. I said, I wonder if in doing his due diligence, he saw what we all saw, that it would pretty darn hard to stop. And that might have planted the seed. But he went to every summer. He spent a week with Daryl Royal and Frank Broyles. They were good friends. And so he might have brought it up then. I don't know. But I know that back then, Alabama's coaching clinic was held in conjunction with something that doesn't exist anymore, the Alabama High School All-Star Game with North South in August. And he had Daryl Royal come speak to the coaching clinic, but he had him bring his offensive coordinator, Emory Ballard, who's really credited with, he didn't invent the wishbone, but he developed it at the level that it was run. And so Emory stayed over and met with Mal Moore, Alabama's quarterback's coach, first year coaching quarterbacks. He'd been a defensive backs coach, and Steve Sloan had left to take a head job.
Mal Moore gets fired about that three times a game at defense.
Oh, yeah. They call him malfunction. and
keep going. I'm sorry.
So with Mal and Jimmy Sharp, who coached guards, and Jack Rutledge centers, and John David Crow, running backs, and Rich Williamson, wide receivers. And they pulled up, and doesn't exist anymore. There was a Holiday Inn out by Indian Hills, and they held up there for 3 days without, you know, the benefit of the technology. Now they had a projector and the film. They had some cut-ups of different formations and results and stuff, and a blackboard, not a whiteboard, a blackboard, you know, drawing up on that and learn the wishbone. This was in August, and we're opening against Southern Cal.
That's nuts.
In Los Angeles.
That's nuts. That's crazy.
So nobody's heard a word about the wishbone until then, and then very few. I didn't know about it. I was in the building. I didn't know that they were up there mm-hmm. scheming to do that. And then, of course, I learned pretty quickly when they were getting ready to start practice. And I'm at practice every day. Plus, I'm talking to the coaches. They're my, you know, my friends. Some of them still are, the ones that are left. And it's a odd thing, but it's going to be secret. So, do you know what that meant? That meant when I took reporters out to practice, which I did all through that preparation, I just say, you can't write anything about what you see. You can just write what, after you talk to Coach Bryant after practice. Never a problem. Could you do that today? I doubt it. Too many people want to be.
Look at me.
Whoever.
Yeah, look at me. Look what I know.
Well, they just want to break a story.
Right.
You know, and I don't blame them. That's their job. But they were conscious of that. So we put the wishbone in. Very basic. Not nearly as sophisticated it would be as years went along. But it was interesting. That was a Friday night game against Southern Cal, and we practiced on Monday nights because of labs. And so Monday night practice, the week of the Southern Cal game, the students, for some reason, probably alcohol-induced to some extent, had a big pep rally over at Denny Chime, which is on the quad, you know, several blocks away from the stadium, I mean, from the practice field. And so that pep rally somehow moved to the practice field area outside, you know. And to my astonishment, Finest Gaston was the head manager at the time, and Finest and I have talked about this. We couldn't believe it, but Coach Bryant was up in his tower and had his megaphone. He said, "Open the gates, let them in." And so I asked him about that later, of course, and he said, "Well, I just thought the students would like to see what their fellow students were doing." Hmm. Well, it was too late anyway for anything to get out, really, that would matter. They wouldn't believe it at Southern Cal. If they did, what could they do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Revamp their defense on a rumor.
Right.
And, you know, I consider it one of the most important victories in Alabama football history, as Alabama went out and beat Southern Cal. Tom Seiler was sports editor of the Knoxville News Sentinel, and he would cover big games instead of just Tennessee. And he was there in Los Angeles with us. And we had a suite up there for the media and the coaches to hang around together before and after the game. George Lindsay, who had been a comedy star on the Andy Griffith Show, Goober, he came over. He was from Alabama, and he came over and entertained us all day long before the game and stuff like that. And so Tom Seiler's on the elevator with us going back upstairs after the game. The rest of us were all staff and coaches. And so we're going up in the elevator, and everything's all quiet. And Tom says, "Boy, there's going to be some tongues wagging." This was a Friday night game now on the West Coast, so it was late back east. He said, "There's going to be some tongues wagging when they find out about this." He said, "Well, yeah, probably so." You know, it's kind of real subdued.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom got off the, and he was a friend of mine. I liked Tom Seiler a lot, even though he was Tennessee. he got off the elevator. We're still going up. And he got off the elevator and was like a circus.
It worked.
I had the stats and everything. So I go in, and John David Crow, who had won the Heisman Trophy at Texas A&M, was our running back coach. He's got him. He says, "Joe LeBoo, 5.7 yards per carry. Johnny Musso, 5.9 yards per carry. I'm a hell of a coach."
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So there's a long, but nevertheless partial answer to the question of the wishbone.
Golly, it's amazing. Mason, man, why don't you finish it up? We got one more question. I could do this for the next 5 hours, yeah, but Mason is going to finish it up with one more question.
One more question. Kind of, you know, speaking of just the way that media has really changed and the way that we've been able to interact with players has changed, you know, especially in just the time that you've been covering the team, like, when would you say you started to notice the shift from, kind of like you said earlier, players being more genuine with media to now it is a rehearsed
robot?
We're here to answer questions in one way and only one way, and we're not going to give you anything useful to go off of. You know, when did you start to notice that shift? Was that something that happened under Coach Bryant, or was that something that came along a bit later?
Coach Bryant was there. Just another real quick example. We had a bad practice in the spring of 1973. And so he announced that Saturday's scrimmage at the stadium would be closed to everyone. Well, back then, Saturday's scrimmage was like people just walked in off the street. You know, there was a lot of media there. So and it was. It was an empty stadium for the scrimmage. And so my job was to get notes from, and I'd called all the reporters, and I said, you can't come. And coaches had called all their people that they used mm-hmm. for different things and said, you can't come. And so I'm waiting for Coach Bryan in the south end zone, which is where I would do, and just get some notes from him so I could put it out for AP, UPI, and a few of the big papers. That was about all that covered Alabama. There wasn't any talk radio. There wasn't any internet. TV hardly covered it at all because they were using film and mm-hmm. it took too long to process. So anyway, he comes over and he looks around and says, where are the writers? And I said, well, Coach, you said it was closed to everyone. I called him and told him they couldn't come. He said, I didn't mean the writers. They're our friends. So it was a different, and they were. Those guys, they were, but they were older, and they were friends of Coach Bryant. You know, he had something every summer. We called it the Bear Bryant Golf Classic, and we'd go say to Willow Point down at on Lake Martin, where he had a cottage, and you know he'd have all the writers, few radio people. There were few that were involved in sports, bowl sponsors, his sponsors that were advertisers. We'd play golf on, I think it was Sunday, maybe we played golf, and then Monday we'd have breakfast with him, and he'd go over the team. I mean, we'd stay in cabins with coaches, wow. You know, and that's where I met C.M. Newton. I was down there. I was still a reporter then, and invited, and I was in a cabin with C.M. Newton and really got to talk to him a lot then, because, you know, he'd gone 4-20 his first year. And so that was the kind of relationship. One quick aside.
Please.
I watched the Coach Bryant was just obsessed with this fact that we were going to put a man on the moon, and it was going to be on TV, which I thought was as amazing as doing it almost. And so we're at Coach Bryant's cabin. He'd cooked steaks and taken us for a pontoon boat ride and all that after golf. And that night's the moon landing in the cabin. Wow. And so there's a sofa. I'm sitting here. Coach Bryant's sitting there. Nobody sat next to him. Coach Bailey, who was his right-hand man, came and sat down on my armrest and offered him my seat. And he said, no, he was fine. And so we're watching. So they have an animation thing of what it's going to look like. You know, and so we're sitting there watching it. And Coach Bryant said, there it is. And we all knew it wasn't. And Coach Bryant, and Miss Bryant was behind, said, Papa. That's what family called him, Papa. Papa, that's a cartoon. And then she turned to Billy Varner, who was our bartender, and she said, Billy, no more. And so we watched them. I mean, anytime anybody talks about where they were when man landed on the moon, I top them.
Jeez Louise.
But anyway, man. That's another example. Another example of our dealings with the media. This was not my idea. Charlie Thornton, my boss, it was his idea. He said, why don't we have all the reporters come down and have press conference with Coach Bryant, go to the dorm and have lunch with the players, and then interview the players afterwards. And Coach Bryant thought that'd be a great idea. And we did that.
That's amazing.
Forever. So you asked, when did it change? Well, I would have thought, looking back, that some of that changed under Perkins a little bit, but not entirely. Practice was still open.
Mm-hmm.
Curry didn't care. you know, he didn't care. Stallings, I thought, might, but his philosophy was, you guys have a job to do, and I understand that. We all have jobs to do, and I'll trust you, which was, I would take that any day.
Mm-hmm.
Dubose didn't know anything. He'd never been a head coach. He'd only been under Bryant and Saban, mm-hmm. Stallings. So, you know, he wasn't going to change anything. Fran was fine with it. I don't think he was fine with it, but he felt like he couldn't change anything mm-hmm. in Alabama. Shula did shut it down to some extent, players particularly. And then, of course, Saban came in.
Laid the hammer down.
How letting you watch practice, how does that help me win? You know, that was his answer to that question. So it was. That's the way it was. But even I thought under Saban, we had better access than under DeBoer in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it gets old when reporters want to ask different players different questions, and we get maybe a dozen all year long,
mm-hmm.
same ones over and over and over. And they've been well coached. Like I always said, I wish they'd spend more time coaching football and less time coaching players on how to be disingenuous to the media. And so, but it is what it is,
yeah.
They've been always said. And so you just deal with it. And DeBoer's, what do they call him, DeBoering?
I might have used that a time or two.
Yeah, it's he's not real animated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to listen, though. Are you getting decent information? And if you ask a good question, you usually get decent information. Not always, but not always with Saban either. In fact, at the start of his last season, quarterback battle was going on.
The cake is in the oven.
Yeah, and going on and going on. And so I guess in the final week I said, I know what the advantages are of competition, you know, iron strengthens iron, that sort of stuff. But are there disadvantages to having your quarterback battle go so deep into the preseason? And he gave an answer that was not the answer to my question. And so I'm sitting there, and I guess I was looking sort of stupid, and he said, you've got a funny look on your face. Did I not answer the question? And I said, well, coach, I guess I didn't make my question clear. He said, your question was clear. I just didn't want to answer it. Well, I laughed at that too. it's not going to change.
Yeah.
And that's primarily because of so many internet sites. You know, newspapers basically don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that most people, if they're reading any kind of newspaper at all, they're reading it on the internet. So it's just a different kind of media audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. And I'm not sure that, I don't think it's all good, certainly, but it's probably not all bad either.
Well, Kirk, I cannot thank you for your time. We've run a little over our usual time, but I could keep going another 3 or 4 hours. I'd love to do this again. Just more Alabama stories, more current day football. Just hanging out and talking ball. I cannot thank you enough for the time that you've given us today.
Can I give myself a little commercial?
Please, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, you can.
Okay. After I was bounced, as I mentioned earlier, from by CBS. Which I don't have any grudges, and the guys that I worked with are still my friends. I've mentioned that Paul Jr.'s hoodwinked me into this museum thing, but we'll be up and running at BryantMuseum.com soon, I hope. I think we've only got one more university committee to get approval from, and then we'll be up and running and I think it'll be just fun stuff. I'm not competing with Bama Central or anybody else. You know, I'm just going to be having fun with it, I hope, and bringing mostly historical perspective to Alabama football.
Bryantmuseum.com when it gets up finally approved.
That website is up, but it's not.
You got to have a whole section for you to write in.
It's going to be a different part of it. Right now, it's just events.
Sure. Well, I watched you. I watched the Nothing But a Winner documentary in the summer that was just you and Rodney Orr were heavily featured. And I just thought both of y'all did such a great job just laying out the history and the importance of really everything kind of going all the way up to Coach Saban and through Coach Saban's tenure as well. So I can't thank you enough for your time today. And please, everybody, go check out BryantMuseum.com. It's going to get kind of red tape's going to get clipped very soon, and you're going to be able to read a lot more historical perspective from Kirk McNair. And I really, really hope to do this again soon, Kirk.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. We're going to get out of here for the day. We want to thank Derek Daniel for sponsoring the program. You can call Derek for all your insurance needs at 205-758-3391. Like a good neighbor, Derek Daniel is there. We had a lot of fun with you on the Bama Central YouTube channel, on the Bama Central Facebook page. You listen to us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify. You can find the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.